Hi, welcome to another episode of On the Long Days. I have to be honest with you, I thought I was going to absolutely kill this episode about breastfeeding. I had notes, I had structure, I had key points that I wanted to hit on. It's a really important episode to me. This episode ended up being a little bit of a hot mess between my child interrupting me and then my cat crawling all over me. It just, yeah. I mean, I did my best to edit it so that it doesn't seem so crazy, but it definitely took me like 3 attempts to do this episode for you. So bear with me. I tried to give you the basics and a lot of key points that you can have the terminology to be able to look into more yourself if you feel like anything that I describe resonates with you. And, you know, I'm doing my best. Like, sometimes I listen back to these podcasts and I'm like, what in the world? Like, I was listening to my birth episode the other day and I said I was ravishingly hungry. Ravishingly hungry. I think I was trying to say I was ravenously hungry. Listen, this is how you know I'm qualified to do this podcast, because I am still in that half-brain parent world of whatever the first year is that is complete and total sleep deprivation. But I do have some things that I want to talk about that I didn't cover in this episode. The first one just being, don't let this episode intimidate you or make you scared or nervous about breastfeeding, because I talk about the newborn schedule, which is the feeding every 2 hours with a 4-hour exception to that. And I think that can seem really daunting and overwhelming. That's really, I mean, you're talking about this with your pediatrician with the specific weight gain for your baby, but that schedule really is only for the first, like, somewhere between like 6 and 8 weeks, you know, sometimes less, sometimes more, depending on your situation of getting your, you know, your milk situated and how feeding's going for you. But it's not like you're doing that for like the first year of the baby's life. Like, now I have my son who's almost 11 months old, and we're feeding during the day, like every 3 to 4 hours, kind of just on-demand feeding. He knows how to latch himself. He just kind of like nuzzles his head into my chest when he wants to eat, and he eats and is in total control of how much he wants to eat. And then at night we're still nursing, you know, 2 to 3 times, and we nurse to sleep, so for both of his naps, and then putting him down at night. But it's much less than what it was at the beginning. My milk has regulated and everything is much easier now, so it does get a lot easier, so don't get discouraged. And speaking of your milk regulating, there's going to come a point, for me it happened, I want to say going into like about 3 months, that engorged feeling of like full breast started to go away. And that is not an indication that your milk is decreasing or that there's any issue with your milk supply. It's totally normal and natural and even good for your breast to start softening. It means that you and your baby have been, you know, communicating through the milk flow and the feedings, and now your body knows exactly how much milk to make for your specific baby, and you don't, you know, that engorged full feeling isn't supposed to be forever. So I remember, like, when I would feed Reef at the beginning, I could like tell, like, one of my boobs would be super, super full, and then I would feel it kind of drain and soften, and then I would actually know, like, okay, now I have to switch to that next one. Like, I could feel the difference between a breast that I had just fed him with and a breast that I was, you know, going to do my next feeding with, or that he hadn't really nursed from as much. And now I don't feel like the difference after I feed in my breast really as much. And that full engorged feeling I don't get unless something's happened where I'm like away from Reef for, you know, like 5+ hours, 4 hours, and I start like getting full because we're going past the amount of time that he would usually feed on me. That sounds weird, feed on me. Well, let's just stick to breastfeeding that one. Okay, and I wanted to talk about clothing, because I hit on this postpartum that your wardrobe changes with breastfeeding. So for me, what worked was wearing crop tops with high-waisted pants that like felt great. And that was what I started wearing like later on in my breastfeeding journey. So like around 4 or 5 months, because it was just convenient. I felt like the crop top with the high-waisted pant kept me covered. Like when we would go out, I could kind of just like place Reef like right under the crop top. You know, nothing was in his face or like a suffocation issue or nothing like that. But he was old enough where he could kind of just hang there. And I felt like very comfortable with breastfeeding him that way. And it just felt like a good look that was easy. At the beginning, I was doing a lot of like button downs. And so like anything that I could just unbutton and stick him on the boob at home felt really good. But out in public, it felt very like revealing to me to be doing that. So that wasn't my favorite look like out in public. And that's another thing that I want to touch on is your comfort level with breastfeeding out in the world, you know, away from the safety of your own home, because that can feel kind of vulnerable sometimes. And I fluctuated with this. There were times where I would be out and I would want more coverage. And there would be times that I would be out and Reef would be crying and I didn't give an F about just latching him, you know, at a restaurant or something. So it did change for me with every situation and just how I was feeling in general with either, you know, my confidence level or I don't know what it was, but it was something that just shifted and I just trusted that feeling. There were times I wanted to go to the car to breastfeed him and I would do that. There were times that I would just latch him with the crop top coverage and that felt good. There were other times where I would take a muslin blanket and fold it in half so it looked like a big triangle and then tie those two ends and then kind of put it over one arm and it would drape over him. There were other times where I would just take a muslin blanket and put it over both of us like a weird ghost and breastfeed him at a table at a restaurant like that. And just listen to whatever works for you. I would say bring a muslin blanket with you everywhere because you never know when you might just want to drape yourself and look like a ghost and pretend you're in your own little world. But I felt like that worked sometimes when Reef got older too, because he'd get distracted and that helped him kind of just feel like it was just me and him. But, you know, do whatever you need. And if I know at the beginning being like, I'm going to go to the car if I want to breastfeed was like a way that I could go out into the world and know that like if I had to go to the car, I had to go to the car and we'd bring the sound machine and that was like our safe little place to go. So whatever you need, and there's no right or wrong. I know people say like free the nipple and all this stuff. Like it's your body, it's your experience, it's your baby, and do whatever you feel is best for you guys. At the end of the day, that's all that matters. So another thing I want to talk about is hunger cues. So I think I said the word hunger cues in this episode, but I didn't go into describing what a hunger cue is. So it's different for every baby, but at the beginning, you want to look for the baby suckling, like putting even like your shirt or shoulder when you're holding them in the mouth and kind of just like making that, you know, like a little suckling thing. Like you'll know it when you see it. And you can also Google hunger cues for babies and see what this looks like. But that's a cue that they are getting hungry. Also like a nuzzling, like Reef, that was his dead giveaway. He just put his nose into me and kind of like rub it back and forth like he was looking for my nipple. And other ones are, you know, kind of like rooting on their hand, kind of like, you know, looking to chew and suck, and those are things that are telling you like, okay, I'm getting hungry. And there's different belief systems on like, oh, don't feed them when they're crying. Don't feed them when they're fussy. Don't, you know, let it get to that point where you're soothing them. Or I just think babies don't have a ton of ways of telling you that they need something. So if your baby is crying a little bit and they're hungry, like, yeah, feed them. I mean, that just makes sense to me, but different people have different theories on that. I think one thing I'd say is doing it, you know, in that time frame that I gave in the episode of every 2 hours can keep them from hitting that point of getting overly hungry, which is a benefit of keeping to that schedule, especially at the beginning while you're trying to keep your milk supply up. And also, it can be harder to latch them if they're super upset. So sometimes calming them, like with a song or rocking them, and then latching them is easier than trying to take their crying mouth and get that open, wide mouth that you can put your nipple into. So yes, sometimes trying to soothe them and then latch them can be beneficial, but I wouldn't say like just don't feed a crying baby, because that just doesn't make sense to me. But again, listen to yourself. And then I want to talk about the idea of like loving breastfeeding, and that if you breastfeed, it's this amazing experience and that it's like so magical. And some moments are, but I feel like that just puts so much pressure. Like I remember just feeling like such a piece of crap when I would want to watch Netflix on my phone when I was breastfeeding. Like I should just be staring at him and taking this in and knowing that this is going to go by so fast. And I feel like there's so much pressure on parents, like take in every moment, and this is like, he's never going to be this small again. And you know, some moments I would, there were nights where I would look at him and I would cry out of, you know, joy and love and just stare at him in amazement. And then there were nights where I wanted to just watch something on my phone or listen to a podcast. And that's totally normal. Like breastfeed, you're going to be breastfeeding a lot if you're going on this journey. And so, you know, keeping your phone charged and close to you with headphones in is a great idea, because sometimes I would get touched out or I just wouldn't be enjoying the feeling of breastfeeding, and I would want to distract myself. And I had to just accept that that's a normal part of life. So that's why I got a separate sound machine for Reef, so that I could play his ocean waves or white noise, whatever you're doing, that was separate from like Spotify on my phone. And I know that's a bummer, because you can, you know, do that maybe in a more cost-effective way by playing things on your phone. But I really wanted my phone to be free for me for when I needed to just, you know, peek on social media or watch something. Or I loved listening to podcasts because I could like close my eyes and just listen to something, listen to some music. Eventually, we got into a Kindle thing where a Kindle really worked because you don't have to flip the pages. I've read like one book in 10 months. I mean, it's not anything crazy, but audiobooks on Audible, just things to distract yourself and make it a moment for you to catch your breath and to, you know, do something for you. And don't feel bad about that. Do not feel bad about that. Okay, I think that's everything. The one other thing I wanted to cover was sunflower lecithin. So this is something I took pretty much the first week of my son's, or the second week of my son's life once I got the mastitis. It was recommended that I take sunflower lecithin from my midwife because it like thins the milk a little bit, so you're not as likely to get a clogged duct, which I was getting all the time. And I really took that for the first like 6 to 7 months of Reef's life. And then I didn't have as many issues with clogged ducts after that. But sunflower lecithin, there's a brand I really like. I'm going to put it in the show notes. Because the other ones I found at like CVS and other pharmacies had like weird additives in them. So this one's really good. I got it on Amazon, and I'll put it in the show notes so that you know what brand it is. And also be on the lookout for things that you're eating that can be affecting the baby. And again, this is different for everyone. My son didn't do well with chocolate at the beginning or cheese. It would make him either like really energized or super constipated. The chocolate energized, the cheese constipated him. And that changed like again, like around 8-9 months, he didn't have as many issues. So I could start eating those things again. But someone else I know had an issue with cheese as well. So, you know, don't get too in your head about it. But if there's something you're eating that you feel like is not agreeing with your baby, just cut it out and know that it might not be a forever thing. It could just be a few months thing. All right, that's everything. And again, if this episode seems a little bit like chopped together or rushed at the end, I apologize. I did my best. And if you have any questions, I have the Q&A section on onthelongdays.com, and you can submit a question there or to info@onthelongdays.com. And yeah, I do a Q&A session every month where I answer listeners' questions. Okay, guys. Well, thanks so much for listening. Enjoy this episode. I'll talk to you soon. Hello. Today, we're diving into all things breastfeeding. Before we get into it, I do just want to say that there is a lot of judgment and a lot of pressure around the topic of breastfeeding. And First of all, I think there's a total lack of education and support around breastfeeding, and it's something that is just assumed that you're going to be able to figure out and that you should know how to do. And it should be just intuitive if you have, you know, breast or chest, that you'll just know when the baby comes exactly what to do. And that is so far from the truth. And there's a huge lack of free resources and information and just honesty about how difficult breastfeeding can be. So I want to say that first. But then I also want to say, you know, there's a lot of messaging around breast is best and a lot of shaming around anyone who's not attempting to breastfeed or who isn't breastfeeding. And I don't believe breastfeeding is the best choice for everyone, because that would mean that I know in depth every single person's life situation. And I think when we make assumptions like that, it just does harm, because there's certain people, there's certain life situations that add up to it not being the best choice, breastfeeding not being the best choice for that person. So really what you want to do, just like with birth, is educate yourself on your options, whether that's breastfeeding, formula feeding, donor milk. You know, there's a lot of different options out there, and you know you best, and find the resources that give you the information, enough information where you feel like you're making the best choice for you and your family. So that's where I want to leave it, because like I said, this is a judgment-free zone. So while I know a lot about breastfeeding from doing my training, and I want to share that information and give a resource that's just free and people can share it with friends and it goes over some of the basics, I don't want anyone listening to this to feel like I am, you know, casting any judgment on whatever they are choosing to do with their child. I just assume that everyone loves their child and is doing their best, because I believe that overall that is, you know, the case the majority of the time. So I'm going to assume that if you have listened this far, you are indeed interested in learning about breastfeeding. So the first thing that we're going to get into is the benefits of breastfeeding, why you should breastfeed if you're interested in breastfeeding. That's the asterisk to it. And, you know, what you can expect with the process. So some of the benefits of breastfeeding are that breast milk is anti-inflammatory, antibacterial. It has infection protection, allergy protection, enhances neurodevelopment and eyesight. It lessens the risk of the child developing leukemia, diabetes, and your antibodies pass through the breast milk. So breast milk has amino acids, fats, myelin sheets, which protect the baby's nervous system. It is designed for the overall optimal health of your baby. And it's something that they can digest, which is super important with their sensitive little bodies. It's better in a way for their kidneys when you're comparing it to other options, because it is something that, like I said, the body is made to process and to digest. It lowers the risk of SIDS. And it helps the birthing person shift their uterus back to size. It can also lessen the risk of ovarian cancer and breast cancer in the birthing person. And it lessens the chance of developing postpartum depression because of the way that it promotes oxytocin. So that's some of the benefits of breastfeeding, chest feeding. And the World Health Organization recommends feeding that way, chest feeding, for 2 years. So it's kind of confusing at the beginning. I mean, it can be very confusing, but I just assumed when I got, you know, pregnant years ago, before I had done my training, that you just get breast milk like during your pregnancy. And in a way, you're building towards that. You get all the glands and kind of all the, you know, network system for the milk to be able to pass through the breast. But you're not actually making breast milk at the stage of when you're pregnant with your baby. You're making colostrum. So colostrum is like kind of the equivalent of this perfect like multivitamin that your baby gets right when they're born. So it's thick. I mean, it's not an actual multivitamin, guys. It's just like all this rich goodness for your baby to have as soon as they're they're born. So it's thick and it's white, and it's a little bit harder for the baby to get out, but that works in a way that it's stimulating that suckling that's bringing in your milk. So when the baby's born, you know, it's hard because you're obsessed with your baby. You're like wanting to like hold them. You're, you know, doing your thing. Like when Reef was born during the home birth, I was holding him. I did delayed cord cutting. So they were waiting for the cord to stop pulsing. And then I was kind of just like taking a second because I was so tired from the birth. Then I got up, passed the baby to Dan, who did chest to chest with him while I took a shower quick. Like it was probably a 5-minute shower. Then I got into bed and then I nursed Reef for the first time. So it was probably within that first hour after birth. Like I said, birth is such a blur. But I was definitely aware of the fact that I wanted to latch him pretty quick after he was born. So he latched, and it wasn't super comfortable for the first few days, even like probably 2 weeks feeding him. His mouth was really tiny, and I was trying to do the deep latch with him, which I'll get into. And it just was hard to get as much nipple into his mouth as I wanted to be able to get that deep latch. But we worked on it. And the thing to know about breastfeeding is it gets easier. The first couple weeks, you could even say the first month, is a learning process for both you and the baby. This is a learned skill. There's some like interesting things when it comes to breastfeeding. Like you could do the, if you've heard of the breast crawl, you can just Google that on YouTube. But the baby can basically smell the amniotic fluid that is the scent of the nipple that's familiar to them from being in utero. So they crawl to that smell. So straight out the gate when they're born, if you put them on your belly, there's something called a breast crawl that they can do if they're not too sleepy, and they can make their way up to the nipple. So they are drawn to the nipple, and it's kind of this built-in survival thing that they can make their way up towards the breast to suckle. But it's not something that they're like amazing at. Nothing is like anything that they're amazing at straight out of the womb, because they are so like new to this world. So it's new for them, it's new for you. So have so much patience around this developing skill that's new for both of you. That's something that I really want to say. It's not something you should be expected to know how to do. It's not something the baby should be expected to know how to do. And that's why during that postpartum time, taking a lot of care and like just slowing down your world so you both can adjust to this new thing that you're going to be doing often, very often. So one thing to talk about is when you can expect that milk to come in, if it's not there, you know, the day that the baby's born. So this can be different for everyone depending on what your birth looked like, actually. So if you had a natural, I believe every birth is a natural birth, but let's just say one that didn't have an epidural or an IV, or like you didn't have a cesarean birth, it can be expected to come in the second or third day. Mine came in the third day. But if you had a little bit more of a medical birth, it can delay it a tiny bit, so it can be more like 4 to 5 days. But when it comes in, it can be overwhelming. But again, everyone's milk comes in differently. So mine came in like insanely quick and full. By like, I went to sleep the second night, woke up on the third day that morning, and my boobs were 3 to 4 times the size. So hard, rock hard, solid. Blue veininess all over them. They looked insane. I was scared. I had to call my midwife. And I'm someone who's a lactation counselor. Like, and I called my midwife. And I was like, this looks nuts. I feel like my boobs are about to explode. So I definitely had some engorgement because of how quick and full they got from my milk coming in. But I used a heat pad and I just nursed as much as I could. I just said, like, I'm sorry, buddy, that you're about to get a tapped keg into your mouth, which was hard because I think I panicked a little bit and wanted to feed him to just get the pressure out of my my breast, because there's a little bit of like a tightrope to walk with engorgement. Whereas like you might feel like, oh, I just want to get all this milk out of my breast and get some like relief. But you don't really want to, at the beginning especially, pump more than what you need to. Like ideally, you're just kind of feeding the baby and letting them relieve that pressure and taking, you know, if you have to, ibuprofen or something, using cabbage leaves. I used a heat pack. I was in the shower a lot, just letting like the water kind of like run off my breast, and that felt better. But the reason being is your breasts have this like intelligence to them, which sounds strange, but they are looking for any indication to tell them how many babies you've birthed. So it's not like your body talks to itself when it's pregnant, is like, we're having one baby, we're having two babies, we're having three babies. Like, you know, you actually have two breasts because you're, you know, the body knows that there's a chance that there could be two babies. You know, less likely for there to be three, which is why we don't have three. But if you think of dogs, like they have, I don't know, 8, 6 nipples, something like that, because they have larger litters. So the human equivalent of that is like usually one, sometimes two. So we have two breasts, two nipples. So your body's looking to see how many babies did we have. And the way that it learns is how much is this, you know, baby or these two babies drinking, eating. And then, you know, it starts to figure it out and you start to regulate to the needs of that infant or both infants or multiple infants. So you don't want to be feeding your baby or babies and then pumping extra on top of that, because that sends the message, oh, we've got multiples, let's produce. And then you're dealing with an oversupply or, you know, constant engorgement can lead to things like mastitis, not good. So you kind of just want to do what you can to make yourself comfortable those first days if you're dealing with any engorgement, and nurse your baby as much as they want to nurse. I had something where I had like a supply that like would squirt out, like he'd suckle and then it would kind of like come out like a mini water hose. And so, yeah, he dealt with some, you know, reflux, like spitting up, some like pretty big spit ups at the beginning, because his, you know, body was learning how much he could also drink. And their bellies are so, so tiny, like at the beginning, like a size of a pea, you know, that during that newborn stage. So they don't need like a crazy amount of milk. That's why you're building your supply off of that colostrum. And yeah, so it's a learning process for the two of you, but you don't, you know, want to be pumping so much that you're telling your body to keep producing. So kind of just staying comfortable during those first days where everything's getting figured out. Now we're going to talk about birth weight, because that was something that I know I was anxious about. There is a lot of emphasis on the birth weight, especially when you're going to those pediatrician appointments pretty frequently at the beginning. So infants have 14 days to come back up to birth weight, and it's pretty common for them to be born, they weigh them, and they can lose some weight after that first, you know, day that they're born, because they're working with that colostrum. It's taking a little while for the milk to come in, so they're not getting the same food flow, if you will, as when they were in utero. So they can lose, you know, 10% is pretty much considered normal. And even more so if, like I said, you've had the IV and an epidural and had some extra, you know, fluids. So most babies achieve this actually a little bit earlier, like around 7 to 10 days. And that's a great thing to see their, you know, weight coming back up, because that's a sign that they are getting enough food, which is what we're looking for as a sign that, you know, breastfeeding is going well. Another thing that you're looking for is wet diapers. So diapers also are things that are going to change during that first few weeks with the baby. So they're going to start with that meconium. I talk about that in the newborn episode, ways to change them that help with that sticky tar-like poop that they have the first few days. And then it's going to turn more to like a mustard, if you're breastfeeding, like a mustard-colored poop. So they should be stooling every 24 hours. And then by day 7, you want to start seeing like 7 wet diapers by day 7. So they can build to that. Like, for example, they can have like, you know, 3 on day 1, you know, 4 on day 5. But by day 7, you want to see like that throughout the weeks as the milk is coming in, as they're feeding more, as they're learning that skill, that the number of wet diapers are going up. And then, like I said, the baby's stooling, so pooping. For it to be a poop, it has to be the size of a quarter. And you want to see that happening every 24 hours. And if you're not seeing them poop every 24 hours, you know, in that first month, maybe talking to your pediatrician or just checking in with somebody about that. So what to do if you have a, if you feel like you're having a low supply, if you're, you know, have gone to the pediatrician a few times and the baby's maybe not gaining weight, you're not seeing the wet diapers that you'd want to see, you're not seeing your baby poop, then first I would contact a lactation counselor to work, because it could be a latch issue, there could be a tongue tie. You know, don't take this as something that is wrong with you or is necessarily wrong with your baby. It's just something that you might need some support around. And in my perfect world, everyone is sent home with a lactation counselor to help them figure this out, because it's so common. The thing that I get talked to about the most is breastfeeding. So you are not alone if you're having, you know, trouble navigating this world. But if you're having a low supply, some things that might be done with a lactation counselor, and I want to take a side note to say, because this gets confusing. So there's different kind of lactation counselor. So there's someone called a breastfeeding counselor, a lactation counselor, and they're all going to be like, have the certified word before them. So you might see like certified lactation counselor, certified breastfeeding counselor, certified breastfeeding support, like any words like that. There's someone who has, you know, the qualifications to be able to help you with things that are, I don't want to say minor issues, but yeah, things around low supply, latch, needing to make a pumping plan. Maybe you're going back to work and you need to figure out how to pump. If you're having issues figuring out bottle feeding, maybe there's some nipple confusion. Then you can talk to, you know, a certified lactation counselor, certified breastfeeding counselor. If you're having an issue where maybe your baby was born premature, you're having like a ton of nipple damage, your baby's losing weight, they're starting, you really want to be breastfeeding, but they're starting to bring up ideas around like adding in some formula because they're concerned. You know, if you're someone who has had breast augmentation surgery and you're nervous if you're going to be able to feed, if you're someone in like the trans community who's maybe had, you know, some reconstructive surgery or looking to do some like SNS feeding, you probably want to work with an international board certified lactation counselor. So that's an IBCLC. And there's someone who has gone like and taken many courses, has gone to school, is more qualified, almost similar to like a nurse when it comes to how much education they've had. They are the go-to person for larger scale issues to figure out. Let's talk about latch. Latch is so important. I think the most important thing, if you learn nothing else from this podcast, learn about what's called the deep latch. I'll put a YouTube video in the show notes so you can see what it is, because that's going to be more helpful than me just describing it. But a deep latch is really important. You know, so the baby's, you know, getting that milk supply, but also to protect you and your nipple so that your nipple doesn't get damaged. And so you can just really start off on the right foot with breastfeeding. So what you want to do is you want to bring the baby, you know, up to your breast, and you want to let your nipple sit on the top of their lip. So like right where you have that little indent in the upper lip, you kind of put your nipple there. That should trigger them to open their mouth nice and wide. And when you see them open their mouth wide, and again, it gets wider as they get older, so this gets easier at the beginning, you're working with a smaller mouth. But you just really try to put as much as of your nipple as you can into that mouth. So you can kind of make a little bit of a C, like if you cup your breast at the bottom with like your hand, well, it's more of a U actually in the shape, you make your hand into a U, you cup right underneath and you squeeze and it can kind of compress the nipple a little bit. You get the nipple in the mouth as much as you can, like areola, you want it in, you want everything, you know, you're not being aggressive or anything, but you just want to place as much of your nipple into their open mouth as you can. And then their chin should be kind of slightly tucked into your breast. And then there should be a little bit of a gap between the nose and your breast. And then their lips are like flanged, kind of like a little fish mouth. And you're listening to hear like a suck, suck, swallow rhythm. And that can be hard to hear, but the more that you do it, the more that you can kind of know that they are getting the milk, because you can see kind of their throat moving, you can hear them eat, so that's something that you want to kind of listen for too. And your nipples can be a little bit sensitive at first, so I did have a little bit of a cracked nipple, a little bit of bleeding those first couple of weeks. It wasn't painful. It was like more uncomfortable. And that healed, you know, within 3 weeks. So it wasn't like this constant, painful, bloody, cracked nipple. It was something that was kind of just an adjustment, you know, to breastfeeding. You don't want to see a cracked nipple for a really long period of time, a bloody nipple for a long period of time. It's not something that should be painful. Breastfeeding shouldn't be painful. You know, there's an uncomfortable period at the beginning where your nipple is kind of building up a little bit to how much it's being used, but that, you know, is a small window and it shouldn't be this long road of painful breastfeeding. So let's say you've been trying to do the deep latch and you're still seeing damage in the nipple. So this could be a few things, but one thing to be on the lookout for is a tongue tie. So tongue ties are often not diagnosed at birth, but the signs of your baby possibly having a tongue tie could be a small mouth that can't quite open, their heart tongue indent, sucking patches on the lips and gums. So Reef had sucking patches for probably the first week or two, and that was it. Then they healed up. But we're looking, you know, for long periods of having these sucking patches that would be on the lips and the gums. Having, you know, that shallow latch, doing long feeds and not gaining weight. And, you know, the baby is going to feed better potentially once this is corrected, but some babies can actually feed fine with having a lip tie or a tongue tie. So it's not something that necessarily has to be corrected, but sometimes it does. So this is something that, you know, you could have someone look for if you think that might be happening in your baby. Another thing is sometimes just weak muscle structure in the mouth. This can be common with preemies, and this is when it could be good to work with a certified lactation counselor or even IBCLC, because there's a sucking training that you can do to work with the baby and improve kind of that function of their mouth. So now we're going to get into what does a feeding schedule look like. So we kind of talked about this need for high feeds at the beginning of the baby's life, you know, during those first few weeks to signal to your body how much milk, you know, it should be making. And so that can look like with the first week, 10 to 14 feeds a day. And these can last anywhere from 30 minutes to an hour. And also your baby could want to feed more than this. I think some people hear, oh, I'm going to have to feed every 2 hours with a, you know, 4 hour window where, you know, there's that exception. So you can time that 4 hour window trying to be at nighttime so you get that consecutive sleep. But my baby wanted to basically have my nipple in his mouth, you know, more often than not. So I feel like I heard 2 hours or every 2 hours and I thought that was a lot. And it ended up being even more than that, which I wasn't really prepared for. And there is an exception again to that feeding every 2 hours with that 4 hour, you know, longer stretch. There is an exception for that the first night of the baby's life where they've just, you know, gone through the birthing process and they can have that 6-hour stretch. So you want to try to latch them pretty soon after they're born. But if they're really drowsy and tired and they went through this huge experience, it's very common for babies to have a 6-hour sleep window and then get on that schedule of the every 2 hours with the 4-hour longer stretch. So that might seem like a lot. And guess what? It is a lot. And this is what we have to be real about when it comes to breastfeeding. It is a lot. You are going to be sleep deprived. You are going to be tired. You are going to be foggy brained and feel a little bit nuts. And this is why having things postpartum to help support you, like I talk about in the postpartum episode of, you know, either meal train or food prep or, you know, all your pads and, you know, just all the support and supplies that you can have beforehand so that you can really focus on this breastfeeding aspect. So then week 2, maybe it changes a little bit to 8 to 10 feedings, 10 being very common, but baby still wanting that kind of, you know, maybe 5-minute snack here and there. These feedings can sometimes be shorter, lasting 15 to 30 minutes. And again, you're looking for those wet diapers and you're looking for the baby to be gaining weight at the pediatrician appointments. So really, like, don't overthink it too much. You know, like, I'm giving you a very vague outline. You know, by week 3 and 5, maybe it's 12 to 14 feedings and you're starting to do something like side lying feeding. We'll get into the different positions in a second that you can try for, you know, whatever feels best for you guys. But I want to give you all this information, but I don't want to overwhelm you where it's like, well, she said, you know, 10 feedings by 2 weeks. So it's going to look different for you. You know, as long as you are latching, you know, at least every 2 hours, sometimes someone has a quicker letdown. So their baby is totally full within, you know, 10 minutes. Some people have a slower letdown. So it takes, you know, 45 minutes. And people can get really anxious about the baby gaining weight and wet diapers. And just take it day by day and just kind of like do your best, latch the baby, you know, look for the signs that the latch is going well, that your nipples, you know, feeling okay. It's not like looking like a tube of lipstick and coming out damaged and cracked and you're in pain and your baby is like seeming really fussy and, you know, like it can get to a point where it feels really overwhelming. But if you're just taking it day by day and you're like, okay, I'm going to set an alarm on my phone for every 2 hours, having that 4-hour window at the beginning, and I'm just going to, you know, switch sides, make sure I have that deep latch, make sure that I'm comfortable with, you know, pillows behind me, that I'm hydrated, that I'm getting fed, that I'm taking care of myself. And then, you know, just easing into it and knowing that engorgement isn't going to last forever. And the beginning, you know, learning, you know, maybe soreness isn't going to last forever. You should see it improving. You know, it shouldn't be something where you're like, oh, I'm in more pain than I was 2 weeks ago, or the baby seems, you know, to be struggling more than they were. You should see it getting progressively better. And, you know, don't be afraid to reach out for help if you feel like, oh, I'm starting to hit a point where I'm, you know, feeling a little nervous about how this is going. Because the sooner you can get help, the sooner the problem can be corrected. And then it can start, you know, picking back up and getting to a place where it feels easier. So there are a couple of things that you can take, which I struggle to say this because there's no like magic herb for if you're not producing milk, like, and that gets marketed all the time, is like, try this lactation cookie, try this, you know, lactation smoothie. And the best thing that you can ever do to increase your milk supply is latch your baby, feed your baby. That is what is going to stimulate your milk supply more than anything else. So I will say this, but it's like, take it with a grain of salt, because latch that baby if you feel like you are having, you know, trouble with your milk supply, or talk to a professional. But it's worth saying that you can try things like bone broth, oatmeal, dark greens, garlic, chickpeas, nuts, ginger, fennel, papaya, cumin, turmeric, and you know, I've heard mixed things about fenugreek, actually, so I'm not really going to be promoting that. But red raspberry leaf tea and moringa, things that you want to avoid while breastfeeding that can bring down your supply, are peppermint, parsley, cinnamon, and sage. And as far as the peppermint goes, this means staying away from things like cough drops, like peppermint teas. Cinnamon, you don't have to be like crazy about. Like, if there's a dash of cinnamon in something, it's not going to, you know, totally ruin your breastfeeding, but just, you know, not wanting to use large amounts. So now let's get into holds, different holds that you can do. Again, I'll put these words in the show notes so that you can Google images or look at YouTube videos. That's the best way to see what this looks like. But cradle hold is one, cross cradle hold, football hold. And that one's great for if you've had twins or a cesarean birth. Side lying when the bed is safe to do side lying. You want, you know, to do that if you're either alone in your bed or if you have a partner. The partner cannot be, you know, taking any drugs or drinking or taking any sort of like sleeping pill. It has to be a safe environment for the side lying position, but it can be a great position to use, you know, if you are feeling like you're sleep deprived and you're wanting to have that, you know, time where you can really fully relax with the baby. Another cool thing is dream feeding. So again, you want to be listening for the suckling and the sound of swallowing, but your baby can still eat while they're, you know, lightly sleeping. So their eyes can be closed and they can still be nursing while they're in a dreamy state. So don't feel like just because your baby is, you know, starting to seem like they're kind of dozing off that they're not still swallowing and eating. So as long as you're listening for that, they can still be eating while they're dreaming. So you can look up, you know, dream feeding if you want to learn more about that. If your nipples are looking a little bit damaged or sore at the beginning, again, this is not a long-term thing. Breastfeeding should not be painful, but just, you know, at the beginning, you're having a little bit of soreness. You can do something called a saline wash. So you take a shot glass, fill it with warm water, and add a little bit of salt, and you kind of dip the nipple into that shot glass. I'm so sorry. My cat is on my lap, and he is, like, not wanting to go on the ground. Okay. So you dip your nipple into the salt glass. 3 times a day you can do this. You sing happy birthday while it's resting in that saline solution, and that can kind of ease some discomfort. You can also try some all-purpose nipple cream, cabbage leaves. Put them in the fridge, freezer, use those kind of as comfort if the cold feels good. I know I liked using a heating pad and using something called lily pads. Now we're going to talk a tiny bit about bottle feeding, but I'm not really going to get into bottle feeding or formula feeding or pumping too much in this episode since I'm just going to be focusing mainly on breastfeeding. But if you are going to be having your partner maybe do some bottle feeding at night, to give you a break, you want to be sure that you're holding that baby nice and close, and you're going to do a count of 8 for feeding them, then rest for 4. So the milk isn't flowing constantly into the bottle. That's not how your breast works. So the breast works where your baby is having to suck, 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 and then it kind of gets like a rush of the milk. And then again, it's having to do the same thing. And so you don't want them to get used to this constant flow of from the bottle. And then they get all confused, like, why am I having to work so hard at this boob when I can just have this bottle that's flowing so nicely and easily into my mouth? So you can look for slow flow bottles or something called paced baby feeding for more information on that. It should be kind of like a wave where they have to, you know, suck and a little bit comes out and then they have to wait and then they get a little bit more. So we talked about engorgement and some things that you can do for that. You know, you can use the warm and cold compress, do those frequent feedings. Again, those cabbage leaves can work. Doing some breast massage, you know, not really trying to pump because that can cause that oversupply. Another thing that can happen is called mastitis. So mastitis is something that I had my 2nd week postpartum, and I noticed it mainly because of the fever. That was the thing that kind of tipped me off. I had a headache and a fever, and my breasts were just sore, and I found kind of that clogged duct in one of them. So some of the other symptoms of mastitis are red streaks, like a palm print in the breast feeling engorged or hot, again, that fever, salty milk, so maybe the baby is not wanting to nurse as much. And it is like this bacterial infection within the breast. So it is something that I, you know, did treat using an antibiotic. Other things that you can do are probiotic and just really hydrating and trying to get the baby to nurse as much as possible. But because I had that high fever and I was postpartum and already, you know, kind of barely holding on, it's not something I wanted to try to fight naturally. I was like ready to take an antibiotic as soon as it happened. But different people have different thoughts on taking antibiotics and, you know, trust your body and your own intuition. Something else that can happen is called thrush. So this is a yeast infection in the baby's mouth, or it can also be on their bum. It can coincide with mastitis because taking the antibiotic then can lead to thrush. In the parent, there's also symptoms of having a burning, itching nipple, some shooting pain, and this might be mistaken for the bad latch. So you're thinking like, ooh, my nipple is really hurting and I'm having some pain. But, you know, the thrush, you can usually kind of see it like as a white coating on the baby's tongue. And that itchiness is like a dead giveaway that it could be thrush. And some other signs that you could see in the baby are that the baby is really gassy or cranky or like pulling off the latch and seeing those, again, white patches that can also be on their cheek. So the treatments for thrush are probiotic for the parent and the baby. Wash everything in hot vinegar, hot water with vinegar. You want to be changing your breast pads frequently. You can use grapefruit seed extract, candida diet if it's something that keeps happening, and all-purpose nipple ointment. And lastly, we're going to talk about clogged duct. I am like an expert on clogged ducts because I got them so much during my pregnancy and postpartum. So it says to be on the lookout for a bleb, like a white dot on the tip of your nipple. I never really experienced that. I always found mine through feeling like an actual, you know, little pea-sized lump within the breast and some pain. And again, kind of that red hot feeling. I got them a lot from wearing like a seatbelt on a road trip. That's when I got a clogged milk duct and engorgement. So you want to be sure that like you're adjusting, you know, that strap that goes right across if you're doing long car rides. It's not an infection, so it's not something that you need to take like an antibiotic for, but it is something that helps to, you know, do constant or frequent feedings with the baby as much as they'll take the nipple to help clear it out. Once you are producing milk, again, this doesn't work with colostrum if you're having it during your pregnancy, but I would clear the duct because it was just like I was so nervous for it to turn into mastitis that in the shower I wouldn't pump, but I would hand express in the shower until I felt like I was getting some relief, just so that it didn't lead to an infection. So you can try that. Also, some people like to use like a massage toothbrush or a personal massager to work out that clogged duct. And that is what I'm going to say about breastfeeding. Like, I feel like I was rattling that off to you. And I hope it wasn't overwhelming, but I was referring to notes because there's just so much to say about breastfeeding. And I really just wanted to pack this episode full of information. And I will, you know, put some different links below to help you find out more information about any resources that I can. If you have any questions, you can go to onthelongdays.com. There's a Q&A section and you can submit a question. Maybe I'll do a Q&A just for breastfeeding if there's anything I didn't cover in this episode that you want to know more about. But again, it is a learned skill. It is a learned skill. It is a learned skill, and it gets easier. It gets easier. It gets easier. And no, you should not be in constant pain. You should not be in constant pain. So you can do it. There is support for you. I'm sorry if you are struggling. This is something that I struggled with as a lactation counselor. I still struggled with breastfeeding and feeling touched out and feeling like it was a huge thing to do. And, you know, they say like a full-time job is a certain amount of hours, and breastfeeding, if you're doing it for over a year, is like add 300 hours onto a full-time job, and that is the job of a breastfeeding parent for the first year of the baby's life. So it is a full-time job. It really is on top of everything else that you're doing. So I hope you know that I'm here to support you. I'm, you know, wishing you all the best, and get that support if you need it. I will talk to you next week. Thanks.